35A creates charitable prescription drug program within the State Board of Pharmacy for the purpose of distributing donated prescription drugs to needy individuals. The drugs must be in original sealed packaging that displays a lot number and an expiration date. The drugs cannot be accepted if the expiration date is less than 9 months from the donation date, if there is any evidence of adulteration or misbranding, or if drugs belong to certain categories of controlled substances. Pharmacists will use professional judgment based upon a visual inspection to verify compliance. All personal information must be removed from the labels of the donated drugs, and drugs must be kept in a secure location used exclusively for the program. The program must require recipient of donated drugs to sign a form attesting to various stipulations.
Okay, Representative Geltzer, would you come up, please?
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Sarah Gelser, representative from Corvallis in Philomath. It's Monday morning. House Bill 2535 creates a charitable pharmacy, and the idea for this bill came from a constituent of mine who is a professor of anthropology at Oregon State University. While she was experiencing breast cancer, she had the experience of multiple times having her course of treatment change, and she watched thousands of dollars of prescriptions that were still in their sealed original packages go unused in her medicine cabinet. And while the waste of this was frustrating to her, it became more frustrating when she went to support groups and met other women and men who needed the exact same drugs but were not able to get them because they either had no insurance or they were underinsured to be able to get those medications. And it made very little sense to her that these life-saving or pain-reducing drugs that they needed were sitting in her medicine cabinet going to waste. So she began doing research and found that more than 30 other states currently operate such a charitable prescription program, and all of the pharmacies that participate are volunteer pharmacies who then would pay a small fee to be able to participate. About 1 million drugs in Oregon go unused every year. This certainly would not pick up all of them because for the safety of the patients, we again have restricted this to those that are in sealed packages. The Board of Pharmacy has been extraordinarily helpful and supportive of this bill and has worked to make it possible to do this without a fiscal impact. The pharmaceutical industry also has been very supportive. Representative Thompson, who is a pharmacist, did a lot of work over on the House side as well to make sure that everything was working from the pharmacist's point of view. And Representative Garrett also did a great job making sure that we were good on all of the product liability. Worked very hard in the House Health Care Committee with Representative Greenlick, and I hope you'll consider forwarding this on to the floor so we can help some patients in Oregon. It's some good news during a time when we unfortunately are having to deliver a lot of bad news.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Yes.
Sir. Thank you, Ms. Chair. Board of Pharmacy had an increase in their budget. Is this considered in that increase, or do you know that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I am not aware how that relates to any increase in their budget, but my understanding is that the Board of Pharmacy has said they can do this within existing resources.
Or new resources, as it may be.
What you're talking about are rare classes of drugs, mostly?
No, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, some of them might be rare drugs, but they're really those that come in the blister pack containers. They might be pain medications. They might be cancer medications. The qualifier for it is that it can be in an original sealed individual dose.
Okay.
And these would come not just from individuals, but also from hospices and nursing homes. And I know that we received a letter from a hospice that talked about their enthusiasm for being able to have a good place to recycle medications that were prescribed and unable to be delivered to the patient for whom they were intended.
So loose pills in a jar or a little container would not be eligible?
Chair Morissette, no, those would
because
not be eligible.
Because they're loose. They have to be in a container.
Correct.
Individually.
They must be in their original sealed container. It would be unusual to have non-individually sealed that had already been dispensed. Usually, if they were not individually sealed, the patient would have taken at least one of them, and that would mean that it was no longer eligible.
Okay, good. Well, when we pick up drugs at our pharmacy, they're in a little container with a top on it. They're all loose pills. But you're talking about the ones that come in a pack, an individual pack, that are mail order?
Mr. Chair, that you could get them at a pharmacy. They could be mail order. They could be, Chair Greenlick on the House side talked about little vials that were injectable doses, and those came in those sealed individual vials. It could be a whole variety of drugs. It's not, the restriction isn't based on the class. It's just based on the ability to be able to know where the drug had been, how it had been stored, because patient safety obviously is the most important.
Okay. Good. Question? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Gelser. In the 30 states that are doing this now, obviously the pharmacy needs some remuneration for doing this. Is there kind of a standard? I mean, because they've got to collect, and they're, you know, a physician prescribes, and they got to get back and say, we have this. I mean, there's got to be some checks in, or some double-blind checks in the system, so...
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, the charitable pharmacies that sign up to do this are able to charge a small fee in order to recapture their costs. In the states that have done this, they've been very successful. There is one state that talked about turning around about $1 million worth of pharmaceuticals back to patients that otherwise would not have gotten them.
Okay, follow-up?
Yes. Okay, I'm a physician. I prescribe drug X to my client. The pharmacy that we're talking about is a participant in this, and they have drug X that's a take back. Do they contact the physician and say, we have this, is that okay? Or does that... I'm getting this drug.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as it is today, they're going to bring out something brand new and hand it to me. But under this, they'd be able to bring out something else and hand it to me.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, the individuals that would be eligible to receive the drugs, it wouldn't be if you had insurance and you're going to the pharmacy.
Right.
I am not sure exactly how that would work on the ground level, and I believe that that's something the Board of Pharmacy would probably be better able to speak to.
Okay. I mean, I'm just curious. It would make sense that there would be a communication back to the prescribing physician that we're part of this program and we're doing this, but
there may be. Yes, Senator Montes Anderson.
Thank you. I'm looking at the fiscal, and if the board needs to add temporary personnel resources, the cost would be approximately $11,000, and then there'd be additional costs of approximately $5,000 for printing and postage, and then the Attorney General costs to review the administrative rules. And we've been really pretty picky here on any kind of fiscal that we're sending to Ways and Means. So it's interesting that the House sends us something that does have, even though it's a minimal, and it also says it's indeterminate. So any comments? I know you want it to go to the floor, but...
Mr. Chair, Senator Montes Anderson, we did have testimony on the House side that it could be absorbed within the current budget, would not require a new allocation, and that is my understanding of why it did not go to Ways and Means on the House side.
Well, it does have a fiscal, but it's small, and usually we would pass out those with less than $50,000, but in these times, we've been sort of paid.
Well, we've passed bills with minimum fiscals for a number of times in your committee. It happened to be the president's bill, but...
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, I called that to his attention, that you were setting a precedent, Mr. President.
Question?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The use of charitable prescription drug program, have there been issues in other states where people, because of the term charitable, think they're getting some sort of charitable deduction when in fact they wouldn't, since this process is not under the 501c3 umbrella of a true nonprofit?
Mr. Chair, Senator DeHolfer, I'm not aware of that problem. This was a change that was made in the bill on the House side. Originally, we had talked about it as a prescription drug repository, and that was not nearly as comfortable to folks as charitable. I think that the idea was we did want to be clear that the pharmacies are providing a public benefit when they do this, and it is voluntary.
Follow-up?
Yes.
Yeah, I would be concerned in doing a lot of estate tax returns that if in fact there were a lot of these packets that were donated back, the family might think they were getting some sort of charitable deduction on the state tax return or something.
Okay.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anyone else wishing to testify?
She was late. There was another lady that came, but she was late. She showed up after a picture.
Okay. Yes, would you like to testify? Thank you.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nellie DeVries. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Pharmacy Association and the Oregon Society of Health System Pharmacists. And I'm just here to urge our support on behalf of House Bill 2535A, mostly because, mostly from the standpoint of being a voluntary program, it in terms of the fiscal and whatnot, it doesn't quite, it makes our view of this bill much more open-minded, and I'm just here to urge our support. So, if you have any questions?
What about the fiscal impact?
Terms of the fiscal impact, I guess what I'm trying to say is that since it is a voluntary program, it's not a statewide mandate.
Yeah.
So, that's why they are actually in support of this bill.
Any cost would be absorbed, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and so the pharmacies can make the decision as to whether or not they want to
be involved
in this program.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's why we support the bill. If it were a mandate, then obviously it would be a little bit more of a challenge for the pharmacies.
Okay.
So.
Good.
Question.
Yes.
When it says it would need to establish a new type of registration in its database, that means the pharmacy database.
Right.
And to create forms, and that's in the Board of Pharmacy.
Right.
And write rules, which is in the pharmacy, and investigate registered drug outlets, which would be a pharmacy duty. I mean, you do have, even though it's a minimal.
Right. It's just, since I know I'm repeating myself over and over, but the voluntary state does make it a little bit easier for the pharmacies to do. So.
I mean, it could be that the president will just send it to the floor. I just want you to be prepared.
No, I understand.
Okay. Thank you very much. Others wishing to testify? We'll close the public hearing and open the work session. Senator Cruz, are you with us? Are you on? Open the work session.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2535 engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2535 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Senator
Berger.
Aye.
Senator Telfer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair
Morrison. Aye. Senate Bill 2535 passes the floor with a due pass recommendation. I will carry the bill. Thank you.
Boy, you take instruction well.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
When I'm listening. Okay. We are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2883. Would you give us a rundown, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2883 creates a public task force of at least 11 members for the purpose of studying public guardian and conservator services in Oregon, including needs, models, efficacy, funding, and legislative requirements. It directs the task force to prepare recommendations and provide a cost assessment for implementation. It allows the task force to accept donations of staff support, office space, and equipment from advocacy groups in support of performance of its functions without appropriation. And it declares an emergency and would take effect upon passage.
Okay, do we have a sign-up sheet? Anyone wishing to testify, would you come up, please? Thank you. Two people. Okay. Mary, would you like to start out?
Good morning, Chair Morrison.
Good morning.
Members of the committee.
My name is Mary Gere. I'm the administrator for the Office of Licensing and Quality of Care in the Oregon Department of Human Services Seniors and People with Disabilities Division. I'm very pleased to be here to testify this morning on behalf of House Bill 2883. This is the issue of guardians and conservators for folks who are unable to make decisions on their own is one that we encounter in our adult protective services work pretty regularly. And so because this is a recurring problem, the department pulled together a work group last fall to look at the issue of public guardian and the need. And what some of the issues were, and the work group has done great work really looking at other states and other models and trying to identify what the need is here in Oregon. The Governor's Commission on Senior Services has worked really hard on this bill to come up with something that has no fiscal impact to the department.
No fiscal impact.
No fiscal impact.
To use it to our ears. Thank you.
And just want to commend Bob Lawrence and Disability Rights of Oregon for their work in making this no fiscal impact to the department. And really committed to coming up with some models that may work. We have guardianship and conservatorship are difficult issues because we really see them as a last resort. Mm-hmm. Taking away someone's rights is not something we want to do lightly, and yet having a program where someone who may be in that position can be well represented in a thoughtful manner is something that we really do want to support. Currently, we have a very small fund of money that we use to pay attorneys who are willing to go to court and petition for guardianship when there's been a guardian who is willing to step forward. But really, this task force and the work group has been focused on situations where there's no guardian who has stepped forward, no one come forward willing to be the guardian. And so that leaves people who may not be able to make decisions for themselves with no one really to represent them. So just really want to commend this work group for the work they've done. And especially the work on this bill, and offer the department support. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mary. Senator Cruz.
Thank you. I have no issues with the purpose of this, but I find it interesting, and not to point specifically at DHS, but when agencies like things, the fiscal is limited. When they don't, it's not, but I guess I'm confused. The passage of the bill would have minimal fiscal impact on these agencies because all members of the task force serve as volunteers, yet it also says that each agency will have to reprioritize duties and responsibilities. They may be volunteering to be on the task force, but they're still on the clock. So there is the issue of what are they not doing that they would be doing if they weren't doing this. And so I do think there are adjustments that need to be made, and this is rather vague as to what those adjustments would be.
Chair Morrison, if I may, and Senator Cruz, point well taken. And from my perspective as the administrator for our Adult Protective Services program, my staff, excuse me, the policy and program staff in central office spend a lot of time consulting to our local APS workers about cases just like this. And so the time that we've invested in the work group that's been meeting and the time that my staff would invest in this task force, I think, would be well offset by the amount of time it takes to really work these cases, if you will, and make sure that we're within legal boundaries and offering good consultation. And honestly, it's the work of the Governor's Commission and Disability Rights of Oregon in volunteering space and administrative support and those kinds of things that allows the department to reprioritize a few things, but really does have a very minimal fiscal impact.
Yeah, but this also includes agencies other than DHS to be involved. So
absolutely.
Okay. Senator Bridger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to tell you that I think this is just a humane issue. As I sat in a hospital in a whole area where people were going through the very end of their life. And I was there almost 24 hours a day. I was astounded at the number of people who were there who only saw a nurse, who saw no family members. And it occurred to me that who was going to make decisions about this individual who no longer was able to make decisions for themselves? And then in one instance, there was a group of family members who came, and the discussion was about who was going to get what. So I think it is a serious humane issue. And on the flip side of that, I'd just like to make a comment that all of us in this room who are here with our faculties and able to make our own decisions and feel good about life have a certain dignity that we like to protect. And when people reach a point of losing that, which any one of us in this room could have had that happen, it is imperative that you have not just waited on the sides of family members or waited on the side of anyone. There should be some very definite criteria, and I'd love to talk to you offline about that, that I feel that people should fall under in order to be guardians of people who no longer, for whatever reason of dementia or other issues could make. And so I thank you for and I thank in advance the task force that would take this issue as seriously as I believe that it should be for the sake of those who are in the condition and those of us who may be.
Chair Morissette and Senator Verger, thank you very much. And certainly one of the primary functions of this task force would be to identify some basic training probably for guardians, some criteria by which someone can be a guardian. Those kinds of things are very important in these situations, as you stated. Thank you.
And I think there's a place on the task force for one member of the Senate appointed by the President. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. You know, we passed Senate Bill 16 out of the Senate, and that had to do with dementia. We made that a fiscal disorder,
We changed the definition.
We changed the definition of dementia, and I know you were very helpful in with me in crafting an amendment that we would get the attorneys not on our backs. And so it's a huge, I think, problem. And I really see the value of this program. I still think there's a fiscal, but be that as it may. Because you'll need to staff an 11-member group. But I feel this is so, so important. And with all of us baby boomers getting closer to being demented, we need to we need to really have our act together in the tsunami that we're going to have. So
what I heard Mary say when asked about rearranging priorities and about, she didn't say it about the fiscal, but it makes it easier for you to do your job, right?
Chair Morissette, what's happening now is the staff that I have in Salem who would be sitting on and assisting this task force are currently now consulting with our local APS workers who are encountering situations where there's no guardian willing who's stepped forward. There's been no guardian appointed, and someone can't make decisions on their own. And so it's possible that with the development of some kind of a program, that the time we spent on those kind of cases would we'd be able to dedicate to the task force, and it really would make certain situations much easier than they are now.
Good. Okay. Other questions for Mary? Okay. Ray?
Or Jeff. I'm sorry. Jeff.
Yeah.
Brandon.
Thank you.
Brandon. Introduce yourself and correct me, please.
Jeff Brandon. Yes. my name is Jeff Brandon, and I'm a member of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services, and appearing here this morning on behalf of that group and in support of 2883. I was going to set the stage with a... Well, first I should give a little background about myself. I'm a small-town boy from Reedsport, which is just down in Senator Verger territory.
Right. That's
right. Spent my whole life there, and I mean, my first 20 years. And then after college and grad school, I was a high school social studies teacher for a few years, and then a community college teacher and counselor, and finally went to law school at night and got a JD from Northwestern. And I was fortunate to get a position with Multnomah County, where I was the deputy public guardian and conservator. And I did that job for the next 25 years. So I'm somewhat qualified to speak on this subject. And also I was fortunate to be able to retire a few years ago. And then I could volunteer my time with the commission and focus on this issue, which during much of my career in Multnomah County, I saw as just a very important thing to take care of. Because, you see, Multnomah County has a public guardian and conservator program via ORS 125-700. So there is a statute in Oregon for a public guardian program, and it's an enabling statute that enables each county to have established such a program. That statute was passed in 1971, so we're going on almost 40 years now, and the only full-time program that's ever existed is Multnomah County's program, and it's still in existence, and it's thriving. It's very busy. Jackson County has kind of a hybrid program where they farmed out the quote public guardian part to a nonprofit organization, but they're the only two in 40 years that have even touched on this issue. And the reason is, you probably know better than I do, county commissions just don't do this. They don't take on human services programs that have a lot of substance to them. They just say that's the state should be doing that, you know. And so that's what, my goal in life now in retirement is to do something about this discrepancy that only one county in 40 years has adopted this program. And my concern is honestly not just a government program, because that might not even be the answer to this problem. The need is so incredible out there of the amount of people that need a responsible party. And this is after protective services or hospital social workers, lawyers, etc., have screened out this case. I mean, as you know, the professionals in this field try everything else short of guardianship or conservatorship first. I mean, they try, on the conservator side, they try joint signer accounts, trusts, any ways to avoid the final step of legal intervention through guardianship or conservatorship, where, you need a lawyer, you got to go to court. It's very expensive to do this. And so we try everything. And on the guardian side, as you know, I mean, we try the advanced directives, and we try all kinds of things to not have full legal intervention. But in hundreds and thousands of cases, you've got to go with the guardian conservator bit. So here's where the breakdown is. It's that it's money. If if the person has some savings and some income and can pay the several thousand dollars that it takes to set up a guardianship or conservatorship, then there is a private community out there that in the last 20 years it's developed of private professional fiduciaries are in the guardian and conservator business, and they'll take that case. But if you don't have money, then this is where the state protective services people come in, and the social workers, and they go searching for a lawyer and a guardian to do pro bono work, basically. So that's where the breakdown is, and that's why the legislature created the public guardian statute in 1971 to fix this problem. But it didn't fix the problem. So the commission have had hearings on this for a couple of years now, and then that changed into the last summer's series sponsored by SPD, where we brought in all the players in the state to talk about this. And really, there were three choices: do we tweak the statute, ORS 125-700, and try to make it so that it could pass county commissions and be established? Well, they tried that 2 years ago with a bill that would give the counties a sum of money as kind of a feeder money to, but that bill didn't pass 2 years ago. So what we decided to do last summer was try this task force, and rather than try to fix 125.700, let's look at the whole national scope of things and see if we can't find a program out there that would work in Oregon. And it could be something like Kansas or Texas, which is a statewide volunteer guardian program. Now, I've been a professional fiduciary, a professional guardian for, you know, like I said, 25 years, and I really appreciate the fact that you need to be a professional in this business. And so that, therefore, I haven't been too excited about volunteers. But recently I've been looking at the pool of talent out there in our state. I mean, with so many people retiring, professional people retiring, mm-hmm. in their late 50s, early 60s, I'm thinking it's possible that if you had a public guardian program that was based on volunteers and you had a really good staff, that might work to train these people and be supervised by professionals. So that Kansas model is a possibility. So I'll just conclude by saying there's three reasons we need to pass this bill. The need is great. Number two, the system that was set up to meet the need, the public guardian statute, is not working. And thirdly, to do the job over the next 2 years and go to states like Kansas and Texas and Illinois and Florida and California and Arizona that have public guardian programs, we need the legislative imprimatur. We need the stamp from the state that says go forth and do a good job and have the authority to talk to these people and, you know, come up with something. So that concludes my remarks, and I would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Questions?
Just a comment. I mean, it says in your testimony that you've been working on this issue for 2.5 years, and you've really brought in statewide experts. So I'm hoping that a product could actually be produced if this indeed does go forward.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Bridger.
Would you say that part of the reason that we have such a large need is because people are living longer, and many people, due to inflation now and in their latter part of their life, simply don't have the resources that they thought they were going to have? Would those be two things that have created that?
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, yes. But those are two reasons. But a third one is simply because the majority of people don't take care of a business and make plans for, you know, who's gonna be their responsible party in the future, and maybe even a majority of those don't even have anybody to ask in the first place. I mean, even if they did think about it, there's so many people that late in life just they don't have family, they don't have friends to do this.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just a minute. Yeah. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, just want to note for the record, we did receive a letter of support from Rick Bennett of AARP Oregon.
Good. Others wishing to testify? Seeing no others wishing to testify, we'll close the public hearing and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2883, A, engrossed to forward with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2883, A, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments? Seeing no comments. Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Senator
Berger.
Aye.
Senator
Telfer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Moore.
Aye.
House Bill 2883A passes. It goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I will carry the bill. Thank you. We're going to open an information hearing, and Richard Harris. Richard Harris, would you come up, please? Okay. This hearing is to get more information on the integrated management and service delivery model for addictions and mental health. This is a new concept that the state of Oregon is looking at, embarking on. Other states have tried it, but so far I don't see anything in the literature that says they've been successful. They're working at it. I think Kansas and Iowa are the two that are currently working on it. So with that, would you introduce yourself, please?
Richard Harris. I'm the Assistant Director of AMH, Addictions and Mental Health Services. Thank you, Chair Morissette and members of the committee for inviting us to talk about this really important concept that the state of Oregon hopefully will adopt. As a way of introduction, I passed out some information. You also received a packet of information, I believe, on Friday that were some base documents that go to the issue about an integrated service and management model. In the most simple way to talk about this is that what this is proposing to do is to run a couple of pilot projects during the next biennium to demonstrate the effectiveness of integrating services, those services being mental health, health care, and addiction services, in a seamless way. It's also to demonstrate the effectiveness of integrating the funding mechanisms for these domains of service. Currently, mental health and addiction funds come through a variety of different pipelines, ultimately to come to the community to provide services. This would be an attempt to find a way to braid those service funding mechanisms together so that they are more effective in the way they deliver or reach the providers and ultimately the clients. The third part about this is to actually form some different ways of managing the mental health addictions and healthcare integrated model by providing for a managed care entity that could combine health, mental health, and addictions. Right now, those managed care entities, which Oregon has had a lot of experience with in the last years with the Oregon Health Plan, actually are separated. And this would be an effort to bring them together in some way or another to demonstrate what it's like when you have an integrated funding system, an integrated management system, and an integrated care system. All of this, of course, won't be an easy task because we are breaking some new ground here. Chair Morissette, you mentioned the fact that we were unable to determine in another state where this had been done, where all three of these elements had been done together. However, they have been done separately and in different manners. So there are states who have created more consolidated funding mechanisms. There are states who are contracting for outcomes instead of the usual fee for service. There are states that have integrated both health, mental health, and addictions into a service delivery model. What we hope to do here is demonstrate that, in fact, you can do all three of these and do it in an effective way that achieves several goals. One of those goals is to manage in a most cost-effective manner. Presently, the state of Oregon, for its mental health services, spends about 58% of the dollars on about 12% of the population. This means that we're spending more funds on higher cost institutional services and spending less dollars in the community for services that prevent people from coming into institutional services, such as the state hospital or the PSRB or the community residential treatment programs for mental health. What we'd hope to do here is by more effective utilization management is to move the services more and to a community supportive housing and service model, which are less expensive and can serve more people. I'd like to be clear that I'm not talking about reducing the investment in mental health and addictions services in the state of Oregon. Right now, we are extremely underinvested in these services. On the addiction side, we are probably only meeting about 25 to 26% of the need for publicly funded services. On the mental health side, we're only meeting, in the adult side, about 40% of the need and a smaller percentage in the children's side of the system. We can do better than that. The whole point of this kind of a demonstration is to show that with proper utilization management, you can expand the level of services serving more people at the same cost. At the same time, I would advocate for investing more in mental health and addiction services because of the effect they have in other state institutions. When we don't spend money on addiction services, what we know has happened is that people get involved in the criminal justice system. We end up paying at the hospital emergency room level, and we end up paying in the criminal justice system. Not investing in addiction services has a huge cost to the rest of Oregon and the rest of the state agencies, Children and Family Services, Department of Corrections, certainly in other parts of DHS. So we're not advocating that we spend less money here. What we're advocating is that whatever resources we have, we try to find a way to spend them in the most cost-effective way possible. So we have provided there were a list of questions that were sent to us, and you should have in writing there a written response. I'm not going to go particularly through those. I hope to answer most of those questions as we go through the presentation. So if we turn to the handout that looks like this. Okay. I will try to go through this in a brief and orderly fashion. As I said before, our goal here really is to provide these in the most efficient way possible to help people become self-sufficient. And that includes providing health, mental health, and addictions, as well as the wraparound services of housing and employment and education. The system, however, needs to function in an individually focused manner. I'm finding myself in need of some water. Thank you. She's going to work on it. What we hope to do here is create a change in the management system that provided the shortest line for funding to go from the state to the provider, also from the federal government to the provider. Much of the mental health system and the addiction system in Oregon is funded with the use of Medicaid funding that is matched by state dollars. Thank you.
Where are you on your handout?
I'm on the first number, page two.
Page two. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. And that wherever possible, we should try to consolidate all available funds. So right now, those funds are administered by AMH directly, by managed care organizations, by counties, by the programs themselves in terms of the way they provide grants and other supports for the services. And what we don't take advantage of is consolidating those funds in an orderly way. And it makes it very difficult to track back in an element of transparency. We would like payments to reflect measurable outcomes. So the payment system needs to be adjusted in such a way that it pays for the outcomes. And for instance, right now we have a long length of stay and our most costly part of the mental health system. People are staying over 400 days in some of our residential programs. This is followed by sometimes long stays in the state hospital. The system that we have for paying for providers to provide these services has no incentive for people to move on into lower levels of care, more appropriately back into the community in a more independent fashion. So we would like to recommend changing the way some of these elements of service are paid for to make it contingent on the kinds of outcomes we think are the best. We also need to make sure that we're located in a geographical way so that we can encourage access but not duplication of services. So going to slide three, we propose two or three demonstration projects that can demonstrate how these new management system would work, and using those willing partners who are already there in the community. Many of these partners already provide integrated health care services, so we're not proposing from scratch to build integrated systems of care, but to take advantage of those communities that have already made an attempt to work on integration of services. Each of the integration projects would not be a test to see if it could succeed, but it would be a dynamic, ongoing process where, as we found barriers, we worked on removing those barriers to make the services more deliverable. So go to the next slide. So many have asked, why should we make these changes now? The Public Consulting Group and the Human Service Consulting Institute, the PCG and the HSRI reports, which were asked for by the previous legislature because of their concerns about how the mental health and addiction system were working. They wanted somebody, an outside entity, to look at the systems and see what was happening in those systems of care and make recommendations. So in the earlier part of the session, as it was reporting to the Human Services Committee and the Human Services Ways and Means Subcommittee asked for reports back on the PCG and the HSRI reports. There were many similarities in those reports, but it was several of the similarities included a call for regionalization, streamlining the system, create more resources to meet the unmet need. They also wanted a system that was transparent and easy to track. Those are difficult to do right now, and I think that those reports accurately reflect changes that would improve the delivery of services here in the state of Oregon. The system needs to be right-sized. Again, large percentage of our dollars goes into institutional care and not enough goes into community-based care. And as I said before, we are underfunded in terms of the need. We need to find a way that serves more people. The system is seen as complex and opaque. I have to say that as a provider...
Just a question, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. So when you say 50% of the mental health funding is spent on 12% of the population, that means 42% is spent on admin?
No, it means that the 58% is spent in institutional care, and the remaining dollars are spent in someplace out into the community. So it's an overbalance in the institutional nature of our system.
Thank you.
On Friday, I was in Polk County visiting the mental health and addictions program there and was really pleasantly surprised to see how much of the service system they have managed to push into the community by taking advantage of housing with supportive services. Some of you may know that was my background before, but I also know that it's not only better for our clients, but less expensive to make sure people have adequate housing and the appropriate services to serve them in the community. So, since the system is difficult to see through, and it's very hard for legislators and or people in the community to understand the multiplicity of funding sources and the way dollars are spent, our hope is that this will allow for a level of transparency so we can see how funds are spent, but not only what are the benefits to individuals in terms of improved health care, addiction, sobriety, and continued stability in the community. So the goals here in our definition of success with the pilots would be to increase the number of people served, use the resources more effectively with shorter lengths of stay, increase consumer engagement in the policy and in the program guidance level, change the service mix, provide services to the community in less institutional reliance, and hopefully develop the standardized assessment tool that will help people have the same level of service across the state of Oregon. Going to slide six. This is one of the reasons why people find the system difficult. If you take a look at, we have a number of Oregon mental health organizations, nine of them. We have 32 community mental health programs. They're delivering in some way or another mental health and addiction services. And we have 17 fully capped health plans. So there's a large number of organizations that are in the process of delivering both alcohol and mental health services. Hope is to create an environment where we can have in a local community an organization and entity, maybe a combination of managed care as well as the mental health organizations, to be able to deliver these services in a unified fashion. Moving to seven. Many of us have known for a long time that the change has been needed to move our system in the direction of a recovery model. Both addictions and mental health are conditions that require lifelong management. And in a treatment-only model, we focus on the time and moment when somebody's in treatment. What we really need to be focusing on are giving the people the tools that they can manage their disease and their condition into the future. And that's the hope of many of us in the field of addictions and mental health now. There's been progress made in this direction, and we want to make sure that we continue to move in that direction by providing incentives to providers to help manage the illness in a recovery model. We also know, and many of you have asked this question over about outcomes, in our current data system, we're unable to measure outcomes on an ongoing basis. We have to compile data from various systems and do the analysis and assemble the reports. We don't have a up-to-date data system, addictions and mental health. The system is 30 years old. I fear one day that the two people who know how the software program works will disappear and we'll be left with a system we cannot understand. So it's important that we work in that direction. This pilot project won't solve that problem, but it will show us how, by the use of a data system that we propose here, to get real-time data when it's necessary. We also hope to get some standardization in the system so that we get appropriate utilization and we get consistency in the way the system works. Going to eight. Oregon has a lot of experience with managed care. In fact, in some regards, probably more experience than any other state in how we manage both addictions and mental health services, as well as health care, because we've been doing it since the initiation of the health plan. The difficulty is we haven't been doing it in any organized form between mental health, addictions, and health care, and that's what this proposal about is, to moving to a managed system that takes and integrates these services. We're also have the experience of the Oregon Kids and Mental Health System Change Initiative that took place several years ago, which shows us that if you go to the next slide, that by consolidating the management of these, utilization management of these services, that you can have the kinds of effects in the system that we're looking for. It's reducing the number of days that people spend in the mental health system. It reduces the reliance on institutional care, and has reduced the number of people having to go to institutional care, at the same time increasing the number of people who receive services in the community. So that 90% of the children in the mental health system are now served in community settings, not in residential settings or institutional settings.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I have a constituent. She's a grandma and has a 12-year-old daughter, and no mental health treatment system will take her now. And we just got this last past weekend, and so I know this isn't, it's digressing a little bit, but I'm wondering, in the system, when you change, the children's systems change, how would this teenager or 12-year-old is so uncontrollable, and yet no one will take her, what options do they have in this system?
In the current system as we have now?
Current system, and maybe with a change.
In children's mental health services, we're funded at someplace around 30% of the need. So there is no question that there are people in the state of Oregon that go without services because we've not invested in the necessary treatment facilities to handle those problems. I think that local communities are hard-pressed to be able to provide the level of care that everybody who comes to the front door needs. And it is unfortunate that we have a system that is unable to do that. I don't believe this demonstration project will solve that problem, but I do think it does tell us that we have a much bigger need than our current system will handle.
I believe that Scar-Jasper Mountain in Lane County takes referrals from the state as well as private pay for children who are out of control, and many of these children are the most severely abused children and need a special residential 24/7 care And I know there was one in Pendleton. I think it's still there. And Scar Jasper Mountain provides that service. And it comes under regulation of both the Children's Services Division of the state and the Mental Health Division. Both have some regulatory power, which is kind of interesting. Raises some issues, but did you have a response?
For the record, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Madeline Olson, the Deputy Assistant Director for Addictions and Mental Health. And there's a process in the children's system, and perhaps, Senator, we could talk with you after the hearing.
We'd love that.
And see, everything depends on coverage in this state, unfortunately. And as Mr. Harris said, the coverage for children who aren't Medicaid eligible is exceedingly limited. The system for children is funded with 97% of the money in Medicaid. So if you have a minute afterwards, we can
let's
find some way to be helpful.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm on slide 10. Certainly in the children's system, with this type of reorganization, we've seen an increase in the number of individuals and satisfaction by those families that are being served has increased as well. So this is the next slide shows the graphic about what's happened in the children's mental health system in terms of the number of days served by all children across the continuum of services. And as you can see, there are some seasonal dips and rises, but the general trend line is to serve more people in the system. Process to date. This originated in the Joint Ways and Means Committee several months ago when we were asked to provide a concept paper to the committee about the system changes that would meet some of the goals I've discussed. We gave them a concept. Ways and Means Committee held a hearing. It was a hearing that was attended and by both managed care organizations and the mental health organizations and providers, and I think that hearing was one of the best hearings I've been to in so far in this legislative session, because people talked seriously about how mental health services were being delivered and what could be done in improving that. From that, we held at the request of the committee, then held a large stakeholder meeting, which Senator Mona Sanderson graciously attended, and it was quite an amazing meeting. There were approximately 175 people from around the state of Oregon representing consumers, providers, and managed organizations, and we had quite a discussion about some of these issues. We then held a second meeting with Willing Partners. These were the organizations, including consumer survivors, that were willing partners to consider how this might be done. AMH then was fashioned a report at the request of Ways and Means, which was sent back to Ways and Means, and there's a copy of that in your packet of material here, that report. So there were questions raised about the budget. I thought we should address them here. We believe that to be successful in gathering the kind of information necessary to make some significant recommendations for the future system of mental health and addiction delivery system, that we needed to have adequate data available to us about how the projects proceeded, not just with the projects, but what were the outcomes with the people that were served under this different management system. So there's a significant amount of resources devoted to capturing that information, in particular the data system, the data analysis, and an outside third-party evaluator to provide a recommendations and a view of the project that didn't come out of AMH but was independent. It does include all of the funds for operations in the not in this budget, but in the delivery system, all of the present funds that would be used to fund the continuum of services would be available to the projects to provide those services. So this is a concept that we've talked about before, which is all of the funds in and over to the managed care entities so that they could, in fact, use the available resources and deploy them in a managed way, and that there are startup costs associated with doing this that are outside of those operational funds that would be flowing to those targeted projects as to help them get this started so that they didn't have to bear the startup costs going into a new project. We believe that we will identify additional service dollars as we go along in the project that can come from other possible places. There's been some confusion or question about the peer services in this, and because we identified a small amount of money to go to the demonstration projects to help with consumer involvement in the design of these projects, there's been a misunderstanding that we meant that this was the money that go direct services. The direct services are dollars are already in place. This is not creating additional direct service dollars, but is telling the managed care entities that they can use these dollars in different ways to deliver the services, meet the goals, which would include consumer-based peer services in their arrangements.
There was a concern in Lane County about the discontinuation of a program that provided peer services for a variety of reasons. It was discontinued, but that, in fact, we had a town hall meeting a couple Saturdays ago, and the place was packed with people who were in that program who were complaining bitterly that it was going to go away, and were told, well, we have all these other programs for you to go into, and many of them said, no, those are not 24/7. I understand that Corvallis does have, in fact, we heard them before, I think, your committee about peer services, which I was hoping they would send someone over to talk about their peer services, but they didn't. So that's an area of concern for me. It's a difficult program to manage, but if you're working to get people off of meds who need meds, you can't do it without very tight peer services. I mean, that's one of the ways of getting people off of meds. Obviously, all people should not be off of their medication. Some can get along without it if they have tight control, support, I should say. So I just thought I'd mention that.
Chair Morissette, I'd like to respond to that. When I talk about emphasizing a recovery model, I'm talking about the necessary services to help people manage their condition over a lifetime.
Yeah.
It's not just a matter of a treatment episode and then it's over with. What we know about peer services is that peer support services are very effective not only in helping people engage in the services, but also in the process of living with the condition in such a way that people thrive and manage their lives correctly. Peer services are elemental to doing this. Now, the state of Oregon is just on the verge of moving in this direction in a much bigger way. And what we've been making recent efforts to do is to make sure that peer service delivery systems are certified so that they qualify for Medicaid funding. Because it's allowable under Medicaid, but there's certain thresholds that have to be met in order for those billings to be effective. So it does place it in the service continuum, and what we're hoping for as we move through this next biennium is to basically lead the way so that more of these services can be provided at the local level.
Okay.
Now, doing that at the local level, there may be different methodologies for how they're done and different individuals involved, but we think that the service themselves is a vital part of the continuum. If I may return to the budget, on page 14, we separated the budget into central support at 21%, data evaluation at 23%, data system and outcome measurement would be at 35%. That's where over half of the dollars going into this are really all about the data and evaluation systems and startup costs at the sites and investments in consumer involvement in policy making. So the next steps, we'll have another hearing sometime. It's not scheduled yet. Additional discussion at the Ways and Means Subcommittee. We intend to have continued individual meetings with local communities. There will be a creation, if we go forward with this, a stakeholder advisory committee, and the proposed implementation date would be October 30th, 2009.
Thank you. Madeline, did you want to add anything?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm here if there are questions.
Okay. We're going to have some others then come up and other questions before we...
We may after the others come up.
Yeah, we may have you come back. Okay. Commissioner, Lane County Commissioner Faye Stewart, Al Levine, and Gina.
Thank you, Chair Morissette.
Welcome.
And committee members. Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Faye Stewart. I'm the East Lane County Commissioner, and I have been for 5 years. Four of those, my first 4 years, I served on the Human Services Commission. And I'd like to state that that's a little bit different than the information I'm going to hand out to you. but anyway, I'm here to speak to the Integrated Management System, Management Service Delivery Model Pilot Projects for the provision of mental health services, and I want to thank Chair Morissette for scheduling this hearing. I appreciate the time and effort that have been dedicated to review the statewide mental health service delivery system. Integration of care is an important goal that we all share, and many community health programs, including my own in Lane County, have already made great strides in this. That is why, after reading the report, I am surprised that the role of the county's mental health authority is not clearly identified, nor is there any identification mechanisms for ensuring public accountability for the quality of care and good stewardship of public funds, which currently is one of the key functions the county serves as local agents of state government. One of my chief concerns is what happens after the pilot projects have had a chance to demonstrate what works and what doesn't. Given that many states have tried unsuccessfully to implement similar models for blending mental health, addiction, and physical health, I remain cautious. I'm aware that participation with these proposed pilot projects is a voluntary basis. Another concern I have is, what are the agreed-upon outcomes we are trying to achieve by this reorganization, and what data systems will be used to collect it? I believe these efforts towards redesigning the mental health system warrant a more thorough conversation, but must include the local mental health authorities, who are your partners in ensuring that the best outcomes possibly are achieved for our constituents. I'd like to add a couple more pieces that weren't in my written testimony. I'm joined today with colleague Commissioner Dwyer. He asked me to make a statement. Out of respect for this body, I'll put it into my words. He's adamantly opposed to this project.
Thank you for putting it in your words.
Also, I wanted to address a couple things that were mentioned by Mr. Harris that in my experience are difficult to deal with. One of them is the trying to bring residential integration into the process. Our experience is, and Commissioner, Senator Morissette, you may have remember this, but several years ago there was some youth that were released from the mental hospital and put into a residential program in Springfield, and there was no notification to the citizens. They were integrated there, and it caused a complete uproar of that neighborhood because of the activities that were taking place by those youth. Those are very difficult situations. We also had one in South Eugene that ended up with citizen outroar, and we had to discontinue it. Also, as a person that has a couple family members that have mental health issues. One is a bipolar manic depressed, and the other is one with infant fetal alcohol syndrome. I'm wondering how we would base the outcomes of their treatment as to the results and how we might get compensated for it, because of the fact that anybody that lives with mental health folks, if you can keep them on their medication and you can help them, they generally do pretty good. But there's times when it's almost impossible to keep them folks in that situation, and you have relapses. It's kind of a lifelong service to those people. And the best thing that I found is that you got to love them and take care of them and help them through those times. And so I'm kind of curious as to how we're going to base the results and the outcomes with that and integrate it. So those are some comments that I had in listening to the testimony, and I'd like to thank you again for this opportunity, and I'll do my best to answer any questions.
Okay. Representative, former representative, County Commissioner Dwyer is a poet, and I thought he would address us in a poetic mode that we might not understand.
Well, like I said, he asked me to make a statement, and I just refrained by saying that he's adamantly opposed to the project.
Okay. I will just mention that I received a call from Bob Repine, who is working with the governor's office and with mental health placement in communities, and Springfield is in the process of looking. There is a site, apparently, that would house six civilly committed, six forensic patients, and they're in the process of gathering community input based on the incident that you mentioned earlier, that there was a bad situation. There also is a bill that has been introduced, which I did sign on to, that would increase the safeguards in preparation for community facilities. Senator Starr carried the bill and mentioned, I think it was maybe Cornelius that had a problem. And so I think if we're going to do the right thing by housing people in the community, which we need to do, we have to go about it properly and do the safeguards. So I think that those things are in place. But anyway, thank you very much for your testimony. Al, did you want to?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Morissette and members of the committee. My name is Al Levine. I'm the manager for behavioral health services in Lane County. So I oversee mental health and addiction services, and I'm also here representing Lane Care, which is the mental health organization that manages the Oregon Health Plan benefit in Lane County. And I just want to express, I don't have prepared remarks, but I want to express a few concerns about this demonstration project as it's rolling out. Lane County participated in the meetings that occurred and expressed its interest and concern. Lane County is very supportive of integrating mental health, addiction services, physical health, and dental services. People are one person. The brain and the body are not separated. Integrated care is what makes the most sense. Our primary interest in this, too, is that many of the severe and persistent mentally ill folks that are in our communities have a lot of comorbid medical conditions, some of which are caused by the medication that's used to treat their mental illness. Folks with severe and persistent mental illness have a 25-year shorter lifespan because of these comorbid medical conditions. And one of our goals is to increase the involvement of primary care and physical health with this population, who tends to not avail themselves of primary care in a typical primary care setting, who are often not welcome in a typical primary care office. They have struggles sitting in their waiting room. They're often not well received. Their issues are often given short shrift and are seen in the context of their mental illness. So we've moved to putting primary care in the community mental health center, and that is proving to be extremely effective and positive one of the concerns I wanted to raise in the way the state seems to be rolling out this demonstration project is the notion of that all of the money should funnel to one entity. We gave testimony to the fact that in Lane County we are developing extremely effective cooperative relationships between Lane Care, which manages the mental health benefit, and LIPO, which manages the physical health and addictions benefit. And we don't believe it's necessary to have all the funds flow to one entity to achieve integration. In fact, in states that have attempted to achieve integration by doing that, integration has not occurred. And what has occurred is a slow but steady degradation of behavioral health services, and in particular, services to the severe and persistent mentally ill. The physical health plans are not expert at looking at the needs of the mentally ill individuals, and that's a concern that we have. So the way the demonstration project seems to be rolling out is that they want a model that has the funds flowing to one entity. Lane County would like to continue to have the opportunity to develop its integrated care in the way that works in our community, and our hope is that however the pilots are selected and however ultimately their success or lack thereof is evaluated, that this does not stand in the way of counties continuing to pursue their own creative approaches at integrating care that are actually being effective and a work at the local level. And I also want to reiterate Commissioner Stewart's concern regarding the role of the local mental health authority. I feel like that's been given somewhat short shrift in this discussion. I think the local mental health authority is truly where you have accountability around the use of funds at the local level. So those are my concerns. The other concern I have is if we're going to integrate all of the funds that currently go into mental health services, and what we're talking about there are not only the funds that are managed through the MHOs and Oregon Health Plan funds, but also the funds that have typically funneled to the county from state mental health, as well as the funding for services that have traditionally been provided by the state. So those would be state hospital dollars and the extended care dollars. If there's a desire to integrate all of those funds to one entity, I just want to share that Lane County has a concern. About 5 or 6 years ago, Lane County actually proposed this, give Lane County all of the money that goes to mental health services for Lane County residents, including the state hospital dollars, including the extended care dollars. And we engaged in discussions with state mental health for almost a year trying to come up with numbers that we felt were the correct numbers based on historical data. And after a year of working very closely with state mental health, we really could never reach agreement on what those dollar figures were. And so as you move into this notion of putting all the money into one pot, you're also shifting risk in a way that concerns Lane County, that the calculations for how those dollars flow are really critical. They really need to be carefully worked out so that the county is receiving its proper share of those funds. But we also think it's important that the state compensate the whatever the local entity is for assuming this additional risk, and that fiscal accountability be made really clear. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. A couple of things. First of all, the fact sheet that you gave me, the impact of proposed mental health budget cuts on Lane County is devastating. Yes, absolutely devastating. If we took the 30% cuts,
yes, sir,
across the board. Secondly, I have long been a proponent of local control over these issues. And before you leave, she has another appointment. both of us are very proud of what our counties are doing in terms of integrated health in different ways. And we have 100% access. We have volunteers in medicine. We have a lot of programs that are very successful. And my feeling is that's where problems are solved, and that's where the action is. And the state should support local programs at work and use the local programs at work as pilot projects. Because all healthcare is local, that's the delivery system, and the feds and the state get money to that, if they're proven effective. So I think that's extremely important. So thank you.
And you can leave.
We've worked together on some of the issues, Deschutes County. Okay, Gina.
Chair Morsak, committee members, for the record, my name is Dr. Gina Nickel. I am the executive director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs, and I am just here today as a support for your constituents. I understand that Lane County came forward with some questions, and I'm here as a resource to them. As you know, the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs supports the best mental health care at the local level, and we want to partner with the community mental health programs, AMH, and the state to figure out how to do that. And we believe that we have some great programs on the ground. As we develop this pilot, one of the questions that have come up is about the payment structure. And to that end, Richard Harris and I talked about bringing Dale Jarvis and Barbara Maurer in. They are national experts on looking at the payment system. They will be here May 28th. We're having a forum from 2 to 4. We'll certainly make sure that legislators get invited. It will be at the local government center about a block away. That will be on May 28th. So we are looking at nationally what payment systems have done and what will work. Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Senator DeMarcus Anderson.
Last legislative session, we directed the state to get a handle on, we wanted to know how much money was actually, I think we did, maybe that was the governor's task force. Anyway, how much money is going into the mental health system? We wanted to know all the funding streams, et cetera, and we could not get a handle on it. And we asked the counties to give us reports. They could not do that for us. So I feel strongly that our system is broken. Our mental health system is broken, and we are not using the most cost-effective and individually focused. We don't have an individually focused manner. We can do better. And the existing structure, the way we have it, is not working. And again, we have turf issues. We have the mental health authority turf issues. We have, but we all, I think, want what is best for the individual. And so, I would hope that you would have an open mind. I this is anecdotal. I hear, the counties want their own money used because not necessarily all of it goes to mental health. We just need a better structure so that and more accountability. And the way the system is now doesn't, I feel, give us the accountability and the transparency that we need. Whether this is the right way, I'm not sure, but at least it's trying to address some of the issues that we have been struggling with since I've been in the legislature in the last 8 years that I've been here. So I really wish that you wouldn't be afraid of this disseminating what is working in your counties, because I truly feel that we need to go a different direction than what we're doing now. I think it's not efficient and it's not individually focused.
So Senator Morissette?
Yes.
Senator Mona Sanderson, I'd like to respond to that. It's interesting. I've heard that in a lot in the last few weeks, that counties are fearful. Counties won't let go of information. And I can assure you, nothing is further from the truth. I'm excited about the work that counties are doing. And when I say counties, I mean communities. There are a lot of things, evidence-based practices that are going on. Yes, I do think that we need to agree. The state and counties and providers need to agree on outcomes and measure those outcomes. I think that's great. As far as accountability, I can give you a sheet and have distributed a sheet. AMH puts down on a sheet every biennium exactly the amount of money that is given. Counties can account, and in fact I have the sheet sitting on my desk, for every penny that we receive and where it goes. And as far as accountability, counties are accountable to our contracts. Our contracts are thick. We do exactly what they say. AMH does site reviews, and in fact I've written a paper on all the accountability levels and hoops that we have to jump through. If there's something different that the state wants, outcomes and do outcomes-based performance, we're more than happy to do that, because what we really, really want is the best services for clients and consumers locally, because they don't care how they get served. They don't want infighting. What they want is the best services on the ground in the community in which they live. And I think AMH and counties are committed to do that. So we're awaiting your direction, and we're glad to step up to the plate and do what it is that you'd like.
To follow, I think it's important, though, that we need to be seeing more than 30% of the population who have mental health issues. We need to be treating, have a more open, accessible mental health system for so many who have mental health issues. It doesn't exist right now. It's too difficult. Yes, probably the care that some of our mental health patients are getting is good. It is very good, but we're not doing enough at this point.
Senator Morissette, Senator Mona Sanderson, you're absolutely right. One of the reasons for that, as you well know, the Community Services Work Group report that we worked on so hard and brought last session showed how much the system is underfunded. That report was redone. It hasn't been distributed widely, but it was done in December. Shows roughly about about $600 million dollars that the local systems, the entire system of care, is short as far as serving everyone that needs to be served. So what happens, what we have to do, and AMH and the counties have sat down, and we have, first of all, who gets served first? The pregnant IV drug user, and on down the line, and the money has to cut off at some place. So we're not able to serve everyone because of the dollars allocated by the state for these services. So at some point in time, we have to decide as a people how important mental health is and how much we fund that. We only have a few dollars that can stretch so far.
Just a little, another comment. I mean, I take a look at Multnomah County. Mm-hmm. I'm most familiar with that, and we have struggled and struggled and struggled. And then we had Cascadia, the debacle with Cascadia Health, and their county is getting their act together and has made great strides in trying to get a handle on the services, because they do. They contract out to the various entities, and there truly needs to be accountability and transparency in those contracts. So that's it. Yeah.
Senator Virger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have serious concerns about the way that this is being integrated, because we are taking programs that we've not been able at the local level to put together well. So we're getting programs that need improvement, and so we're going to put them all together, put all the money behind them, and have some system. My interest is alcohol and drug treatment, and I didn't hear the commissioner or Mr. Levine mention that, but I know that that's of concern to them because it impacts their local law enforcement. This is a program that at the county level has struggled individually at each county. It has not been well funded. We've not been able to get it. So why in the world would, at this point, when we're trying to get it into a better program where we can access more people and put it into this big integrated system, even if it's in a pilot project. So I have, that's just one of my concerns, but I have others as well. So,
Senator Morissette, Senator Verger, I just wanted to say addictions, as you know, right now, if the 30% cuts were to last, addictions is slated to be cut about 90%. We took a lot of hits. We lost 1,000 addictions workers in 2003. Those have never been recovered. So when you cut a program that severely, it's hard to integrate hardly anything into something. So that's one of the areas that we do need to examine.
Follow up, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. And it also would suffer immeasurably by comparison.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, the sheet that I'm looking at that I received is devastating. The governor's recommended budget calls for a 90% cut in DHS, 90% cut, and then DHS 30% reduction, $14.2 million for some programs. And the counties, Lane County, would be unable to serve more than 600 indigent clients who have severe, persistent mental illness. The Johnson unit at Sacred Heart could close. The state hospital would be more overwhelmed, and we're fighting a battle at that level. And then as far as addictions, our drug alcohol, we have been working since 2001 for a alcohol recovery fee to help fund the addiction. That would include some mental health because they're all related. So I think it's a funding problem right now. We just don't have the money to do what we need to do. And integration, I think, is important, and I'm hoping that we do that at the local level, which we're doing. But
Senator Morissette, committee members, I agree. We can do better, and that's what we're in the process of doing. But we can't ignore the fact that the mental health and addiction system has been severely underfunded at all levels, federal, state, and local, for a long time.
Yes.
So we know this isn't Ways and Means, but we would just ask you to take a look at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Ralph Groner, would you come up, please? And then we will hear from Richard Harris and Madeline again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. There are two measures in this legislature. I find I'm getting chewed out by every legislator. One, I just got chewed out, but I smiled in the hall for me standing up for global warming, which I simply won't change on because of my beliefs. And secondly, I stand up very hard for my county run mental health program. So let me explain that for a moment, if I may. I've had a lot of time on the other side. First, I'd like to say, Mr. Chair, that I represent all of your county mental health programs and many of your privately run, not Cascadia. We tried to organize them. But I represent Coos County Mental Health. I represent Lane County Mental Health, Multnomah County Mental Health, and many private carriers in between. And by the way, Senator Telford, I represent, by means my union, Deschutes County Mental Health. And if someone else were here, you would see that AFSCME actually represents more of the local government, both private and public, both mental health and MRDD, than any other union in the state. Secondly, I'd just like to mention my background a little bit. When I came out of U of O, I went to the work for the War on Poverty called the Office of Economic Opportunity in 1969, making minimum wage. For 3 years, I was a community organizer. We basically, in our county, had no programs, nothing, buses, services, it was not there. My job, along with one other young fellow, was to come in and hire, you call them AmeriCorps now we call them VISTA. And we door-to-doored, and we built a little bit of public health out in our poverty areas, Estacada, Sandy, et cetera. Mental health was a big problem that we tried to address. But I'll skip all of that. After 3 years, I came here to the legislature and chaired the subcommittee on the very issue you're discussing in 1973. And I was told the very kinds of things I'm hearing today. I'm in a good mood today. I had a wonderful weekend. But the truth is, it's deja vu for me because I'm hearing the integration of services is going to somehow help, and I would hope it would. I left after two sessions because I couldn't afford, with two babies, to be very honest. I told the public at home I couldn't afford to serve here in my late 20s, and I went home and ran for county commissioner. And as such, I took with me the kinds of things I had learned about mental health, public health, welfare, et cetera, off my Human Resource Committee service. And quite frankly, I began working, if you add my 3 years trying to organize my county and the poverty agencies, I began integrating our services in Clackamas County, and it came truthfully from me, and that was to develop a Department of Human Resources. And that Department of Human Resource goal was everything that I've heard today. More cost efficiency, effectiveness of our programs, etc. To some extent in Clackamas County, that occurred, at least for a while, because we did integrate county mental health, public health, and we added CEDA. Some of you may not be old enough. I don't know if Senator Cruz would remember CEDA, but that's the old government employment program for those of low income. We put that in human resources, and we put housing, since we removed the old Housing Authority Board, and myself and two commissioners put that in human services. And quite frankly, our goal was to do exactly what I'm hearing now, was that you had, and then we created the thing we had created when I was a community organizer, information and referral, so that we had one center where you could call and get an answer regarding mental health, public health, housing, etc. That information and referral system, by the way, exists today. It actually goes much more complicated than that, but I just go on and say this. I've been there. I came back to work for AFSCME now for 20 years and watched damage go down. Our members were the doctors and the RNs. I then watched Fairview go down, not because of you, federal mandates, on the MRDD side. And what I've observed, and we represent Albertina Kerr in the private sector, but we also represent the state-operated, all the state-operated group homes. Then on the county side, we represent most the county mental health employees, but also many of the private sector. Where am I coming from? When I'm told that it's going to be less expensive, and at the same time, a county commissioner, when I talked to Bruce Goldberg out here in the hall, although I don't know that I got to talk, we don't have the money. I have to say that what we're really facing is what the Oregonian article on revenue put out yesterday, and I made my wife a bet that very few would have read it. I have to, because I do tax policy for labor. I have to read every one of them, and I have to understand it, and I finally do. But it's related to this issue. We have a broken tax system, and they showed why. It's so Byzantine and complicated that you can't explain it to the public anymore. We have funding. Somebody will say the general fund, look at it, it grew by 12%. Well, what they didn't tell you is the fact is we had Medicaid money coming in. We have increased federal funds come in, but it certainly wasn't an increase of your personal income tax dollars. People were unemployed. So that gets complicated, so does this. And the problem at the county level, which affects adversely mental health or public health or any other program, is Measure 50. I'll pass by that because we're currently in a wonderful exchange with Paul Warner as to whether we can have a voluntary, no pay, in the bill clearly identified, task force to come back to the next regular session about what to do about
Let's
that.
Let's talk about mental health. And
okay, but that deals with mental health. Here's why. I'm sorry, I have to, and I was going to, I don't do it quick enough. Let's use my county. Clackamas County spends about $2 million of county dollars property tax on mental health. The vast majority comes from income tax. In the state of Oregon, and when we talk complications, the mental health is funded primarily by state income tax dollars, smaller amount by county property tax dollars. Secondly, let's take public health if integrated into that system. That's what I'm hearing. The fact is a majority of that, about 90%, is local county property tax dollars. About 10% is state income tax dollars, and I can do each of these for you. Housing, employment. I won't. I'm boring you. It is as complicated, however, as our revenue system. So what am I saying? I think it was a mistake when they held their second meeting, the state did. They didn't invite my union, who represents private and public, to that meeting. I wasn't angry, but I was heated, and I did get in the meeting. And all I have to say is Lyndon Johnson probably said it best when he said that rather than have your enemies, he'd like to have his enemies, he'd rather have them inside the tent. I'll use the word spitting out. That isn't really what he said. Rather than outside the tent, spitting in. The truth is, I think I have as much knowledge as quite a number of people on this total issue. I'm not bragging, but I've been involved all my life in it. And the fact is, our union, just because we're a union, have something to offer. So let me close with this. You really hit a key. Not to schmooze you, you don't need it. But the fact of the matter is, Mr. Chair, our relative to mental health, if we're really going to talk efficiencies, that's wonderful. But when I heard the words less expensive by my county commissioner, and I heard it by today in the testimony, what we're really saying is we don't have enough revenue at this level, nor do we have enough at the matching level, at the county level, to do the problem right. Don't get me wrong. The more efficient we can be, the more clearly defined and who provides what really ought to be, Senator Mona Sanderson, it really should be. However, what we're really talking about is let's get more efficient. And if efficiency, and I'll close with this, means what I've observed over the last 20 years, we basically have privatized our mental health system out of damage. And you just remarked on Cascadia. I won't comment any farther. We've also put our MRDD, mental retardation developmental disability clients, into the private sector. But in both cases, what we've done is put low wages, low benefits, 80 to 100% turnover a year in the MRDD side because of that. And I work with management to get that budget up a dollar last session. On the mental health side, it's the same. So what am I suggesting? Don't forget your county mental health system, which is highly regarded. And Multnomah privatized 80, most of theirs. The other counties I just mentioned haven't. And for God's sakes, what we ought to do is strengthen and add to the county mental health system, which doesn't have the high turnover and the higher administrative cost and keeping people out of our jails and prisons with highly qualified staff that stay there rather than go work at a local McDonald's flipping hamburgers, because if efficiency means salaries and benefits so low, then it hurts the client, not Ralph Groner's union members. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Madeline, would you come up, please, also?
Okay, we've got a few minutes left to wrap up.
Richard Harris, Assistant Director of AMH, and I'd be glad to answer any questions first and leave my statement to last.
Questions?
Okay, go ahead and make your...
Thank you for having this hearing. It was very important for this kind of discussion to go forward in this way.
Okay. This all came about because the co-chairs of the Subcommittee on Human Services, Senator Bates and Representative Tina Kotek, asked that this happen. Is that right? Were they the...
That I don't know.
Okay. I have what I... And I don't know if I have it with me, but that was... it was before their committee. Are you familiar with that?
I think the department has.
Okay.
Chair Morissette, could you clarify the question?
Well, are they... I understand that they are supportive of what you're doing.
I believe that's true, yes.
Okay, I will ask them, because that's what I understood from looking at the some of the material. Okay, go ahead and...
Okay. I think we're looking forward to the opportunity to take the demonstration projects out into the community to find the best way to deliver mental health services, addiction services, and health services. Looking at the other trends that are going on in the state of Oregon and nationally is that we are at the beginning of a change in our overall health delivery system. One of the things I feel very strongly about as a former provider of addiction, mental health, and health care services is that I realize the difficulty of delivering integrated services, but they're not without benefit to the individuals with mental illness and addiction services. One of the major reasons to be doing this and to think forward about health care as integrated with mental health is the huge health disparities in mental health individuals. People die younger. They have more lifelong disease issues that accompany their mental illness. And if we don't bring them into the health care system, we'll see this trend continue. And I don't think that that's anything that anybody in the state wants to do. So the challenge of integrating health, mental health, and addiction services is in front of us. How are we going to go about doing it? I, for one, believe that having spent my life dealing with working in the mental health and addictions business is that we're frequently not at the table the way we should be when some of these bigger decisions are made. And that's a result of looking at, you can look at the way addictions and mental health is funded, and it's not funded to the level it needs to be. I would like to make sure that addiction and mental health services are in the beginning of this health revolution to make sure that those services are provided along with all the other medical services, and that we help shape the way mental health is received in the larger health care. It was brought up that some individuals with mental illness may not sit in a doctor's office. My experience would be that, in fact, those health services need to be delivered on the sites where people go. So people with mental illness, wherever their services are being delivered, needs to have health care brought into those services. This is not a discussion about will health care dominate, or will mental health dominate, or will addictions dominate. What we have to do is make sure that people get access to those services no matter what part of the state of Oregon they live in. I think running some demonstration projects will reveal those communities that have take the commitment seriously about bringing these integrated services. Those communities can demonstrate how they work in their community and give lessons to the rest of the state of Oregon. So I'm looking forward to working with this committee and the Ways and Means Committee to move this forward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. On the letter April 20th, 2009, to Alan Bates and Senator Alan Bates and Representative Tina Kotek from Richard Harris, in response to your request, please find the attached report developing an integrated management system. The executive summary, the concept paper based on the information issued and the recommendations of the public consulting group and DHS reports at the request of the Ways and Means Subcommittee. So Alan Bates and Tina Kotek
requested this to take place. I don't know where they are on this. I have not had an opportunity to talk with them about the report that you made to them, but that's basically what we're talking about here. So I will pursue that. Madeline, did you wish to make a closing statement?
Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, as some of you know, you've seen me at hearings and things, and I've been doing this work for some time. Mm-hmm. And for me, the reason that we should try to have these difficult conversations and try to find ways to support the local areas mm-hmm. that are attempting to work with the myriad of state regulations, federal regulations, strings on various pots of money is for one thing and one thing only, and that's because integrated services will do better for the clients that we're all here and we all care about. Mm-hmm. It'll, I believe, over time improve the quality of their health care, given enough time and support in recovery, support from their peers, taking responsibility for their lives. I think we'll see a decrease in years of lost life. I think adults with mental illness want the same thing as other people. They want a place to live. They want friends. And I think we all need that. So it's going to be hard, but I think it's something that we need to strive for.
Okay, thank you. The other issue that we've dealt with over the years is a disparity between the various counties' mental health systems and the tri-county area, and we tried to resolve that one. I guess it was in 05, and Senator Ringo, representing, I think, Washington County, had a bill. My suggestion at the time, which I still make, is why don't we turn it over to Metro? Hey. In speaking with a Metro counselor, he said, why not? That ought to motivate you to get your act together. We could turn it over to Lane Council of Governments and the Western COG and so on, and let them manage a unified system of mental health and let them be the funnel into which the money goes and the integration takes place. That would be another interesting idea. But, okay, I think at the local level, but there are different local levels, though. Integration among counties in a particular area, particularly the metropolitan area, might well be served by Metro. Okay, other questions, comments? Okay, thank you very much. We are adjourned.